And this is very often the case. I've found it's very dangerous to help people. When somebody asks for my help, I think, uh-oh. If I do a good deed for this person, I'm probably going to get punished for it. And it's often the case, you know, that when you help somebody in need, you have to be prepared for repercussions, because oftentimes you're going to undergo some suffering when you help somebody that's in need. One of the reasons for this is a person gets in a state of desperation because of problems they have in their own life and the vibration that they find themselves centered in. And when you help them, they suck you into that vibration. Both of you are a lower vibration and subject to more things happening to you that you didn't plan on. So when you help somebody that's in a state of a fairly low vibration, not necessarily a bad person, but just in a bad state of mind, it's a little bit contagious in the fact that you can pick up their energy, and that energy can attract negative things happening to you. Have you guys found that out in your life, that oftentimes when you wind up helping somebody in need, that you had to actually suffer for it?
Yes.
Who said yes? Yeah, right. It often happens. It's kind of...
You're supposed to help other people. I mean, it's the right thing to do. When somebody asks for help, you're supposed to help them.
Right. It's good to help other people, but it's also good to be wise, so that you understand what you're getting into when you help somebody.
JJ, I remember at the gathering, I think it was either last year or the year before, you made the comment, and it always stuck with me, don't offer help. Don't offer to help somebody. Don't offer to give advice unless they ask for it.
Right.
Matter of fact, this was the advice Jesus gave. He said, give to him that asketh. It's good advice. I've tried to follow that. When somebody comes and actually asks me for help, I do my best to help them. But it's a little dangerous to go looking for people to help. And I've been around knowing people in my life that, you know, they are on a mission to go help people, and disaster often befalls them from place to place where they're actually seeking. But, you know, when a person actually comes and asks for help, he's usually in a situation. His consciousness is elevated enough that he's prepared to actually receive help. And this type of person isn't nearly as dangerous to help as somebody that you're just going out and you're finding some homeless guy and you're going to help him out, invite him to, you know, hey, come stay in my home for a few days. I'm going to help you out and put you out back out into life, and you're gonna challenge the world by the time I'm done with you. Well, boy, that guy's really asking for a major problem, because that homeless guy is not prepared to move up yet. He's not asking. He's just asking for the next handout, but he's not asking for actual help. But when people actually are prepared to ask for help, that's when they're ready to receive, and they're not quite so dangerous. So anyway, getting back to the subject about life being fair, there's two types of things to consider. There is hurt that is caused not by the person performing the giving act, but by the person receiving, interpreting the giving act as hurtful. And so what can be hurtful to one may not be hurtful to another. Then there's other types of hurts that are pretty much universally recognized. If somebody steals from you, that's something that you consider valuable, that's hurtful, that's going to create karma. The second category creates karma and creates true unfairness within the context of one life. But Jason gives the key here. He points out that there's more than one life. Okay, if we go in the context of 1 year of your life, that isn't a very good parameter of judging the fairness of your life as a whole, is it? Because you might live to be 90 years old. So just 1 year of your life, how fair
life was to you in that year isn't a good parameter to judge how fair your life turned out. But if you could go the whole 90 years, you could find out your life maybe wasn't that unfair. But there was still unfairness. Maybe you had a bad heart that whole life. Maybe you couldn't really go dancing the way you wanted to because you always had to take it easy throughout your whole life. Or maybe you never found the love of your life like your good friend did or something like this. And boy, you just had that big gap. You wanted to find your soulmate and you lived to be 90 years old and everything went pretty good except you never did find that soulmate. Darn. You know, it'd been nice. It's really not fair that my friend found a soulmate and I didn't. Well, looking at just one life in comparison to all the lives that you're going to live is like looking at one year in comparison to a whole life. You have to look at the wholeness. When we look at the wholeness, and this is where reincarnation is so important. If there's truly reincarnation, then there's a good possibility that life would be fair. Because maybe you learn a great lesson by not finding a soulmate or a good person to have a relationship in this life. Maybe you learn a lot by being on your own. And then in the next life, you meet somebody and you're more able to be a good companion and appreciate that soulmate in this next life. So that squares it up. So now you feel a lot more fair. This is a feeling I used to have in the church. My first marriage was difficult, and I used to think, man, look at all these guys that say they're really happily married. And I'm with this woman for all eternity, so I'm never going to be happy. I'm eternally sealed to a gal that thinks I'm crazy, you know. So... So that just does not seem fair at all to me. But when I discovered reincarnation, I thought, aha, that explains it. You know, I'll eventually things will even out. Eventually I will find somebody that I can get along with. And amazingly, I found somebody in this life. I didn't have to wait for the next life. So... things often even out pretty good in one life if we live long enough. So life will be fair if we consider the wholeness. And when you think of these religions today preaching that life is not fair, if you say that life is not fair, then we're really saying that God is not fair. And if God is not fair, you know, how can we have faith in God or in a good end for ourselves? Because if life is really not fair, that could mean that, you know, some of us may actually wind up being in a painful situation for all eternity. Maybe there's some hell to go to or something like that, where we're just going to be miserable for all eternity and others will be happy for all eternity. So if there is not a fairness equation in life, you know, we all should be worried. You know, unless we happen to be one of the lucky ones that gets the beneficial end of the stick, so to speak. Now, I personally believe, and when you look, we talk a lot about soul contact here, and when you look at the innermost part of your being and ask that question, is God fair and will life be fair in the end? In the end, is everything going to square up? So I will have a chance to do everything that I want to do. The core of your being will shout, yes. You can feel that within yourself. If you ask that question to the innermost part of your being, which is connected to every other life in the universe, you can feel that answer, yes. If you don't have a soulmate in this life, sooner or later, it will happen. If you didn't have a feeling of accomplishment in this life, if you felt frustrated with everything that you tried to do, will there come a time that you won't be frustrated, that you will triumph, that you will succeed? The answer is yes. You can feel that within you. If you search, you'll feel that answer resonating within your soul, yes. every desire of your heart, you will have an opportunity to fulfill. Doesn't that feel like good doctrine? Doesn't that feel good to think about? There's nothing too good to be true, as stated in my books.